Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills. We all remember the so-called Arab Spring of several years back, right? Well, the seasons, they are changing in Egypt. I'm not sure which season they're in now, but I do know that the situation is anything but Vivaldi in nature. Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, is here with us to talk about what's coming out of Egypt these days. Lincoln, what do we need to know?
Well, you've got me on a musical bent here, Vivaldi. I'm thinking about Handel's Egypt.
Yes.
In fact, I think it was out of Egypt. But anyhow, it's Handel's oratorio about Egypt and the captivity. Anybody that's Jewish or Christian and with some awareness of the Old Testament knows that Egypt figured pretty prominently in Old Testament history. It was a major power to be reckoned with at times. Other times it was a refuge to people, and Jesus himself as a child was taken there by his parents to escape wicked Herod. Mm-hmm. So Egypt not only was a powerful country, it also had the aura of a sheltering, benign place to live. They wouldn't harass you. Well, you know, those days seem very, very distant nowadays. You know, Egypt, it's turning it the other way around. It's been the breeding ground for some of the most revolutionary thought. Ayman al-Zawahiri, the surviving offsider of Osama bin Laden, was a doctor in Egypt, an Egyptian doctor who joined the radical Muslim Brotherhood that was persecuted for so long in Egypt before the Arab Spring. But after a while, and he was in prison for his beliefs, then he joined Al-Qaeda and, you know, went on to greater and worse things. But meanwhile, back in Egypt, that Muslim Brotherhood has just gathered strength, in spite of the fact that periodically they were outlawed and the leaders imprisoned. And as we've discussed on this program, it was amazing as the Arab Spring burst forth. And you know, we could spend a long time discussing it, but there were many elements at play. The young people just wanting a change to the status quo, but some people wanting perhaps democratic reform. Other people, many of them followers of the Muslim Brotherhood, wanting direct control in a Sharia state where Islam was the ruling norm. And we've lived in the last few years to see that optimism that the world's media was indulging in turned sort of dark in Egypt because the Muslim Brotherhood won the first presidential election. Mohamed Morsi, a relatively unknown figure from the Muslim Brotherhood, became president and immediately acted very autocratically, increased his powers greatly, went to other countries in the Middle East and openly supported Hamas and Hezbollah and got Israel just quaking in their boots. He didn't openly say he was going to take down the defense pact or the peace treaty with Israel, but that's really what's shaking the world up. And now, in the last few days, just before we're doing this radio program, his intransigence got so great that the military made a public declaration that if he didn't change his government within 24 hours, I think it was very few hours, then they would replace him. Well, he hung tough, and they replaced him. And now people aren't really sure what's coming next. And I've been reading as many articles as anyone else, and I have as many other views as anyone else. And I try to bring a religious liberty viewpoint on it. And I've got some things that I want to air on this program. First of all, I think it extremely likely that the U.S. is behind the scenes talking with the military and perhaps even help precipitate this because our interests are at play there. Mm-hmm. And this is not to condemn or excuse or anything for the U.S. It's just the way great powers act. We send billions of dollars in aid every year to Egypt. It's their largest single source of revenue at the moment. So, because tourism essentially dried up after the Arab Spring, and it was the largest single source of money. So the economy is in free fall, and the money to the military is pivotal. So it would be unusual if we hadn't pulled a few strings to make this happen. And so you can't say it's right or wrong in a civil sense, but it may be ill-advised in the longer strategic sense, because I believe we're now back to where Mubarak was in a difficult spot under the state of emergency for so long when he outlawed the Muslim Brotherhood. People clearly were unhappy with Morsi and his lack of progress in solving things. But think about it. Could he have done anything other? Tourism had dried up. The country's in total disarray. It was in free fall, regardless of what Morsi was could or would have done. Mm-hmm. It's quite possible that the Muslim Brotherhood panicked and realized they couldn't solve anything and really dared the old forces to come in and buy into the problem and make it their own. And I believe the Muslim Brotherhood will be many times more dangerous in a relatively open Egypt, but where they are imprisoned and marginalized and treated as the pariahs, because they have huge social support. This is the religion of the country. 80% plus of Egyptians are Muslim.
Do we have any kind of template for this? Has this type of situation ever developed in any other country in the past? You're a man of history. Are we looking at something we've seen before, ever?
Well, on a religious front, probably no, but it's roughly analogous to, or there's a certain analogy to some of these nationalist movements that were repressed by the colonial powers, and they just became more powerful when they were made illegal. Mm-hmm. In the Arab Spring, we accepted glibly what we were told in the media, that Mubarak was paranoid and that he used the excuse of fighting the Arab Muslim League, rather, as an excuse just to keep the heavy hand. But people forget that his predecessor was killed by the Muslim Brotherhood activists. They made many attempts on his life. They are behind practically every radical Islamic movement around the world. They are the ideological engine for the global caliph concept. The idea that they fail at their first attempt at governance and that they'll just give up and go back to their tents is naive to the extreme. I believe that now they will more likely revert to radicalism. Hmm. And so we need to pray for Egypt, that some sanity emerges, but realize that this is a moment of extreme crisis. This is not a resolution of their problem. And it is not necessarily the solution to the incipient religious rule there.
What is exactly, in your opinion, America's interest in this? I mean, there's no Egyptian oil. Why should we be concerned about what happens in Cairo and out in the desert? What's it to us?
Well, we've made it our business.
Well, but why? What's our rationale behind that?
The first thing is that Egypt is the largest Muslim country. It's the linchpin to the Muslim world. And if it's unstable, the whole area will be unstable. If it is radicalized, particularly with Saudi Arabia lurking off to the side, if they both become extreme conservative, anti-Western Muslim forces, then it will not be well. But no, there's nothing that they inherently have that we want, but what they are is important to the well-being of that whole part of the world.
Or what they could become. In other words, we in this country tend to want to keep our enemies or those who would do us harm off balance and not give them a home to call home.
Right.
We want to make sure that they're really basically on the run at all times. Would that be behind what we're doing there, you think?
Well, I'm not sure that we've got it well thought out, but I'm just saying it's so automatic.
This country does things without thinking it all the way through? we do things without having it well thought out?
I originally came from Australia and I watch things, and to me the central error of U.S. foreign policy, and I'll probably get calls on this, it's one of niceness, but it's really a dangerous thing.
Yes.
The U.S. tends to think other countries think like them.
Yes.
We treat them as though they're little miniature versions of ourselves.
Yes.
And we're applying our own models there.
Our own rationale.
No, I don't think the U.S. has any bad designs whatsoever on Egypt. But we're in there big time. Mm-hmm. And we're in with the military. Mm-hmm. And that's the U.S. pattern. We've, over the years, especially in Latin America, backed the military regimes often when there was a legitimate democratic regime in waiting. Mm-hmm. Now, remember what we've neatly accomplished by, in essence, backing the military. We've now shown that we're not irrevocably committed to supporting democracy in Egypt, because Mohamed Morsi was elected by the narrowest of margins, but he was indeed the president. And essentially, there's been a political coup of the military. So it's going to be very hard to bring back a legitimate democracy, and particularly when the Muslim Brotherhood will say that they were treated badly, the U.S. didn't want an Islamic regime and all the rest. Well, there's some truth in that. So it's going to make it much harder. And I'll refer to a statistic, though, as far as the nature of Egyptian society that I'd mentioned at the beginning of the Arab Spring. There was a survey done just before the outbreak of the demonstrations in Tahrir Square, survey done of Muslims in Egypt, good cross-section of them, and they're 80% of the population. And of the ones surveyed, 80% of them said that they would support a regime and a law that would bring in the death penalty for conversion. So we shouldn't think that this is, it is an urbane society on one level, but religiously it's very foundational. And its foundational view is rather antithetical to religious liberty and indeed an open Western-style democracy.
You know, I can't help but think when we talk about how America views itself and its role in the world. In the world of health, there's a saying that to a surgeon, every solution is surgery. It seems to America, we're the surgeons of the world. We are the military surgeon of the world. Everything needs to have guns and predators and boots on the ground. That's how we deal with everything that happens in this world. And we need to maybe start thinking about herbs and changing our diet. I'm using examples here. Maybe there are other things that we as America can do, and especially we as Christians. How can we, in the 60 seconds we have left here, how can we as Christians try to help our own country decide that it's not just a surgeon and surgery is not all that's needed in the world?
Well, not much we can do except ensure that our society is based on rules of charity and of brotherhood and that we exemplify, speaking as a Christian principles. We can't enforce them on national policy, but if people with that view move into these positions, that's the way they'll dispose of it. I think, relatively speaking, the U.S., more than most countries, does exemplify that. There's a lot of, it's not quite selfless, but fairly altruistic actions that the U.S. takes in helping some of these countries. Mm-hmm. You know, we often give aid, but our expectation sort of slowly creeps up on us. Yes. Initially, it's given just to help them. Yeah. There's a great irony, too, that we're going bankrupt in the United States, even as we still give incredible gifts to other countries. I myself don't even know how that quite works. Sooner or later, it'll just be funny money we give to them.
Yes.
Better to give to them real moral support and heartfelt agreement for their movement towards self-determination.
Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, thank you so much for being with us today.
Always a pleasure.
Until next time, this is Charles Mills along with Lincoln Steed inviting you to rest in the freedom of God's love. Goodbye, everyone. If you'd like more information about LifeQuest Liberty, call Three Angels Broadcasting Network at 618-627-4651 or email us through our website at 3abn.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of liberty burning in your heart today.